What happened the night Chicano student activist Oscar Gomez died?
There needs to be some rest. There needs to be some closure.
We follow the leads on Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.
LAist Studios.
Just a heads up that we are not clinical experts, and if you need professional help, there will be some links and resources listed in the podcast description, as well as in our newsletter, which you can sign up to receive at las.com/newsletters. Welcome to Yeah, No, I'm Not Okay. This is your host, Diane Guerrero, and the question of the week is, who has made a genuine impact in your life? Think about it. For me, that is my dear friend, Jermaine Fowler. When I met Jermaine, the connection was instant. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, we hated each other. At least that's what we thought. And then we figured out that we were these like little kids lost in this wild playground jungle sandbox thing. And then we found family within each other. And when that happened, we swapped lollipops like Lil and Phil.
Remember the first present we ever gave our mom?
You mean before the worm?
Mm-hmm. Back then we used to be hungry all the time. Remember? Mommy'd come in and feed us the old way.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping on one side and not on the other.
Our first laugh.
Mommy says that was the best present we ever gave her.
And then I gave him a Freddy Krueger pencil, and I guess that really meant a lot to him because we've been friends ever since. Having a friend I can confide in is so important for my mental health. Someone that respects and listens and makes me feel comfortable when I need help, Jermaine is that friend for me. We have stayed in touch since we met, and we've really relied on one another's friendship, and his friendship means a lot to me. Jermaine is also an incredibly gifted soul and the next Oscar-winning actor, writer, comedian, and father. Yes, he is winning an Oscar for being the best father. He has such an incredible career working in film and TV across various genres. More recently with Coming to America, the sequel to Coming to America, and Judas and the Black Messiah. And a few years ago on Sorry to Bother You, directed by Boots Riley, which I love. He appeared in shows like BoJack Horseman, favorite show. All That, favorite show. And not to mention, he wrote, produced, and starred in Superior Donuts, which is where we first met.
Superior Donuts for the family.
Jermaine, thank you so much for joining me on my podcast. Yeah, no, I'm not okay. I appreciate you coming on and having a talk with your dear old pal, Lil D.
Lil D. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
I am very honored. I'm very proud of you. This is great. I love what you're doing with the podcast, and I love what you're doing with yourself.
Thank you. I love what you're doing with yourself, my friend. You are, I think, hands down, one of my favorite people. And I love to see you out there shining. I love to support you. And also, like no bullshit, like, your work is really, really inspiring, and it's really great. And it's totally you, and it's great to watch. I'm not, like, embarrassed. You know how, like, your friends make stuff, and you're like, yeah, I'm fine. That was great. Like, thanks, man. Thanks for making that. Like, yeah, like, your shit's actually fucking good. So,
That means a lot. You know, we're so hard on ourselves. So,
It means really a lot to me because I don't have to lie to you.
Man, there's some friends I got to be like, yeah. But you know what? You know what? Screw it. Like, they're getting anything made these days is hard. And everyone's so opinionated, and there's no compassion for anything, you know? And I feel like I can look at a performance or a movie or a TV show or anything and, you know, see the silver lining in it, and, you know, even if it's a failure or, but what constitutes a failure? You know, I always look at that stuff and I always see that there's always a next step. You know, to me, like, it's not about what you're doing. It's about what you're trying to get to. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm always chasing something. I can only talk about me personally, and I'm always sort of like chasing something. I've always been into a plethora of different things as far as not just acting, but I've always been into music. I've always been into art and, you know, sculptures, architecture and all this stuff. And I've always felt like all those things have inspired my work. Mm-hmm. So if someone has a negative opinion or a positive opinion about it, it's always like, oh, thanks. Well, I appreciate you liking that, but you know, I'm off to the next thing anyway. So
right,
it doesn't really, you know.
What do you find yourself chasing?
I'm a curious guy, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. Even if I got like a really nice award for a thing, mm-hmm. it probably wouldn't be enough because I'm always like, you know, thinking about what I want to do after it.
Right.
And that can be an issue because sometimes it can be hard to be present and enjoy, you know, a moment and a win. And that is a huge issue for a lot of us, is that we don't enjoy what we've created.
Mm-hmm.
And so lately, I'm trying to stay grounded and enjoy those moments that I've made. And
yeah.
the people who've helped me get there, I've been truly embracing and loving, and I'm really happy with all of it.
Well, you should. I would say that you have a lot to be proud of and a lot to be happy with. I mean, you just we just saw Coming to America. Shall I read more? Judas and the Black Messiah. Fucking Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah,
I had no idea that you were producing the new All That. Like, yeah. that was crazy. I remember when you came over my house and we just like watched like old like All That reruns. That's what I love about you. I feel like we can like sit and just like talk about art and film and movies and different TV shows that we like and just like totally like vibe on our appreciation for all this like silly nerdy shit that's out there that like when people look at us wouldn't think that we would vibe with.
Well, I didn't know that about you till we started talking about Rocco.
Rocco's Modern Life.
I had no idea you were a Nickelodeon nerd like myself.
Huge.
And had no idea till we started to talk. And when we met each other, we were at an interesting place in our lives.
Mm.
You know, my mom was sick and, you know, you were going through your issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what you were going through, and you know really what I was going through. And it was I think a lot of people have a weird first reaction with me because I wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm pretty transparent about how I'm feeling most times and mm-hmm. what I'm going through. Like, I wear everything on my face. Like, mm-hmm. I don't really like hide anything. If I'm sad, I'm going to be sad. If I'm upset, I'm going to be upset. If I'm happy, I'm going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I think you caught me in a very depressing time in my life where my mom was, you know, she had breast cancer, and I was really sad, man.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it was hard to make a lot of new friends, you know, because mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it.
Yeah, of course.
I just didn't feel like it. It was either, you know, the people I already knew or family, right? And mm-hmm. I was just exhausted. I was just so tired. And I remember what helped me get through all of it was, you know, talking about cartoons.
Because
it reminded me, you know, just about like just a more simple, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like what, when we were kids.
Yeah. And I needed that at the time. And it was, you have no idea. There was no one else I could talk to about that crazy shit but you. And I was like, and I, over like a period of time, it became like, I was just like, ah, you know, I would get more and more excited to come to work to see you.
Yeah.
And, you know, just laugh, and you, Rel, and Katie Judd, and
yeah,
David.
Well, so that was, yeah, that was when we,
yeah,
that was when we met. We met on the set of Superior Donuts.
Yeah, man. And we were all like, everybody individually, everybody was going through something. It was interesting, and how you don't really know what people are going through until you start to, you have to open up about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I did, because I got to know you better, and, you know, Anna and Darren and Dave Maz and, you know, Judd and Katie and Rel, mm-hmm, better. It was awesome. So I appreciate that time a lot. Like, I really do. I really, really do. And I look back fondly at those experiences, and I'm happy I got to do that and share that show with you.
Yeah, that show was amazing. It was freaking awesome to, first of all, like, I wanted so bad to do a multicam, but I so much wanted to do a multicam with you. I wanted to do it with that kid that I saw on the fucking Superior Donut commercials. You know, I saw you and Judd Hirsch, and I was like, who's that guy? I'm like, I want to do a show with that kid so bad. And of course, you know, getting to be on set with you guys was such an amazing experience. But yeah, you were grieving at that time. And I didn't know how to, I think that my vision of the show was, I'm going to come on board and, like, I'm going to be best friends with Jermaine. And, like, that's really what I wanted. And I need to, first of all, I need to chill out with that. Like, not everyone's going to be your best friend, Diane. But, like, I did see that, like, something came alive in you when we did talk about cartoons and when we did talk about, like, those common interests. Because I never, you know, for me, it was the same thing. Like, I wouldn't just go on shows and be like, I love Rocko's Modern Life. And everybody would be like, yeah, what's up? Me too. It's like, I had very little connection with other folks, you know. And so when I met you, I wanted to find that common ground, and we did. And I'm happy that we were there for each other during that time. I love you, Jermaine.
I love you too, Diane. I really do. I also think that's what's fueled a lot of, I'm sure your creativity, especially mine, is just staying true to what made my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm, there was always this one quote that I loved, and it was, never grow up, it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Something along the lines of, like, it's important to keep a little bit of that childhood afloat, mm-hmm, within your personality, because mm-hmm, it's really going to drive a lot as a creator for myself. Like, it's important to kind of keep that imagination and that hope, that naivete is really, for me, the crazier my ideas get, it's because, like, you know, I decided to, you know, channel a lot of anything, like, can be made, and that, like,
right, to, like, listen to your kid, yeah, self. Like, when you were a kid, you were just totally like, okay, I want to see, like, you know, this buffalo marry this goldfish. And, like, and that, like, was totally okay.
And why not? Like,
and why not?
Yeah. But that's why my favorite people, like Tim Burton or even Eddie and
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy. Like, they all have this, in a very, like, beautiful way, this childlike exuberance and this, like, enthusiasm about what they're doing. And you need that. Like, you mm-hmm, need that. It's what's going to keep you going. It's easy to be jaded and bitter in this industry. It's very...
It's easy to be bitter and jaded as a grown-up.
Especially right now. And what's helped me a lot to kind of stay excited about, you know, every day and what tomorrow can bring is hanging out with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm one of those, like, stereotypical fun dads. And it makes me laugh because I hate that term fun dad, because it always...
you are a fun dad.
I'm pretty fun. Like, I'm pretty
fun. You
were
a fun dad before you had kids.
Before I had kids. I just love my kids. I just love my kids. And I just know what they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. I just know what they want to do. I'm like, because I would want to do it. Like, I always say, I'm like, what I want to do, I'm sure they want to do. So we'll go to the beach on random days. We'll go to Universal to hang out and, you know, look at the water fountains. And, you know, they're very simple. Like, that's all they care about. They don't need anything else besides your presence and your attention. Mm-hmm. And no matter what you're doing, you can do that. Like, you can just give that to them. And I just try to embrace that throughout this entire quarantine.
Is right.
That, you know, I know we're stuck in a house for a year, but there are things you can do to make it fun in there.
Right.
So we've been filling the house up with like ball pits and, you know, gigantic stuffed animals, inflatable, like, you know, costumes.
I know.
And
you guys
stuff.
Are constantly inviting me to like these weird kid parties. And I'm like, what are you? You're freezing the what? You're freezing the driveway so you guys could freaking like.
Oh, yeah. The sledding. Yeah.
The sled.
We ordered the snow company to come by, or the ice company to come shave ice and make a snow hill for the kids. And it's great. Like, it's. I just want to give my kids, you know, the shit I didn't really have as a kid. And that was, and it was all that type of stuff.
Well, I see that childlike in you and like the work that you do. And just like, I mean, hanging out with you always is so much fun. And
I love you, dude. Thank you. I appreciate that. I like to have a good time.
After the break, how Jermaine stays true to himself.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
I feel like the opportunities that you've had in your life, you've really created for yourself, and you've made sure that everything that you've worked on has been something that you have really been about. And I want to know, what does that process look like?
So, you know what's funny? I'm not sure if I have an exact process.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that I am moved by my heart. In my gut.
Mm-hmm.
I know that everything that I do and I want to do is right. I want to look back at everything that I've ever created and understand that I've grown from that person, and I'm getting better, and that what I intend to create reflects me and what I'm going through, and it can somehow help another person understand what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize like some of my favorite people have gone through the same shit that I've had to go through in my life. When I realized that, I was like, I need to start telling my story in a more honest, reflective way.
Mm-hmm.
So people can not be afraid to talk about themselves and what they've had to go through, because we're human beings and all of our stories are different, and yet they're still the same, you know? So I want every project to be different. I'm unafraid of everything. Like, again, my curiosity drives me, and I want to tell everything. I want to tell all types of stories. I don't care who they're about. I don't care, you know, as long as these stories have a beautiful, you know, whether it has a message or is very honest to a particular theme or genre. Like, I love genre. I love horror movies. I love action movies. I love comedies. I also love bending all those and making something just unheard of. I want to open doors for people who didn't have anything like me, who didn't have a production company or a dad or a mom or a cousin who was in the industry to, you know, nepotism. You know, like, I didn't have any of that. I had to scratch and claw my way to be here right now. And it'll continue to be that way. It's weird because, like, it's one thing I'm trying to, like, you say, I've had to create a lot of these opportunities for myself, and it's true. And it's one thing I had to understand was that comes from a lot of conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The world don't understand me. I got to do it myself. Like, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from me not having any of those resources, you know, that around me and having to do it myself. And one thing I'm really understanding and really embracing is the fact that I do have a support system who wants to help, and really letting that love in and that support in. Because for 15 years, it was me on my own. And now I'm really embracing kind of delegating a lot of work to other people. One of my strengths and one of my flaws is the fact that I am really driven, and it can be a good thing and it can be a detrimental thing in some ways. Like, this is what happened. Like, for a long time, I wanted to portray a particular character in a biopic. I don't want to say his name because the deal isn't closed yet. However, it's a pretty huge deal to me, and I've always wanted to play this guy since I was in high school. When my mom and dad divorced, I went to my mom's house, and I was inspired by Chappelle's Rick James sketch to do my own true Hollywood story of this guy. And so I shot it with my little sister in my mom's apartment. And it was great. It was really funny. And then years later, like, I was like, I want to do a movie about this particular dude. And it wasn't happening. And then a couple months ago, I get a text from my agent and my manager. And they said, hey, dude, something weird just happened. I'm like, what's going on? You know how you wanted to play that guy that we all know you love for a while now? And I was like, yeah, well, we got an offer in for you to play him in a biopic. And it got, there was just a huge pause. And I'm like, excuse me? And they go, yeah, I know, man. It's fucking weird. And I'm like, it is weird. And it was one of those things where, like, I had to let go of it for a little bit and just kind of let the universe and whatever the powers that be, let it happen, you know, and stop trying to force things to just come to me or build things that, you know, like, there is an organic way things are supposed to be built. And a lot of times I had to realize that with patience and just patience. And I've been learning that. Like, that's what I've been learning throughout this whole quarantine is it truly is a virtue to just kind of just chill the fuck out a little bit, you know?
I know you're talking about being patient and letting things come to you, but I have never met someone who is so dedicated to the inspiration of life or the world. And that is such a beautiful thing to see, my friend.
I appreciate that, Dee. Thank you.
It really is.
You know what's funny? Like, I used to, living in Bushwick, it was the most artistic area I've ever lived in at the time as a young adult. And I would walk by graffiti pieces and other pieces of art down there and sculptures, whatever it was. I would try to find the person that made it, if I liked it, and contact them and tell them, great job.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. Like you said, I've always been inspired by life and you know, walking by something as simple as a graffiti piece and, you know, contacting or
like just creating a whole, like going home and like writing like a whole story about it or like finding an article that like connects to this thing that you saw the other day and being like, I bet you we could do something with this. And that is what our lives should be. I feel like I come across so many artists that are like frustrated, like me included. You know what I'm saying? How many conversations have we had of like, oh, man, I'm frustrated. Like, you know, people don't understand me. And like, I want to create this, but yet I don't know. You know, I'm always like having some sort of fucking identity crisis, you know, which is totally normal, especially, you know, being from America. Or the Americas, I guess. It's like sort of a given that we have like this identity crisis going on, and that, you know, sometimes we're constantly changing. And so sometimes, you know, one day you think you figured it out, and then the next you're just like, I'm having an identity crisis. It's like, nah, bitch, chill. Like, you just literally are like evolving. And you're like, oh, okay.
That's what my therapist said. Like, I was having a meltdown about selling, doing another, you know, stand-up comedy film. I was excited about it. And then after it started to happen recently, I didn't want to do it anymore because I was like scared. And I was like, what the fuck am I going to talk about? Am I ready to go back on stage? Like, after my friend Kevin passed, I didn't want to do anything. He's my favorite comedian. So it was hard to go back on stage because it reminded me of him.
What's Kevin's last name again?
Kevin Barnett.
Kevin Barnett, man, yes. Rest in peace. Rest in power, Kev.
Yeah. But yeah, I was having a meltdown about do another comedy special. My mom died. She was a huge, huge part of my writing process when I moved to New York, and we started to reconnect and develop stories together. She was the best. And
I didn't know you were developing stuff with your mom.
Hell yeah. Like, I was too young to really understand a lot of the shit I was talking about. And it wasn't until I spoke to my mom about, like, Mom, remember that time so-and-so? She'd be like, oh yeah, but so-and-so. I'm like, what? And it was our like reconnection. Like, that's, they helped us reconnect, because we got to laugh about the crazy, insane shit that happened to us when we were a family. It was nuts, and it was very therapeutic, and it was awesome. I was like, yo, my mom, I knew my mom was funny, but this woman can tell a fucking story. So we would kind of just, we were like a tag team, man. You know, I'd be like, yo, Mom, remember that time daddy did this, or Yashika did that? She'd be like, yeah, I remember. So this is crazy. So back then, and she would give me texture and color and all that. And it was awesome. So she gets a lot of that credit. And Kevin was the honestly, like, the bravest nigga I've ever seen on a stage. Like, he would bomb his ass off and sabotage all of his sets because he could. And if he was having a bad set or a bad day, everybody was having a bad set or a bad day. And I would, like, watch him in awe, because he was, like, the coolest, like, tallest, most, like, lady killer, like, Jamaican nigga I've ever met in my life, and had the balls to kind of go on stage and talk about the weird shit he wanted to talk about. He was such an anti, you know, stereotypical, like, he was just against the grain and, like, you know, such a contrarian. I love that dude. And that dude had the gall to talk about anything he wanted to fucking talk about. And when he died, like, it's a weird thing to say, but it felt like my enthusiasm for stand-up died too.
Damn.
And when I had to go on stage, it hurt, because I was like, what the fuck am I, why am I up here? Like, he's not here, you know? It would suck. And there were times I would sabotage my own set, you know, trying to chase him. You know, there were times I would just try to say the most outlandish shit on stage and try to disrespect, you know, whoever was in the audience, trying to chase him. And it wasn't me. Like, you know, at times it was fun, but then I was like, man, I'm just trying to chase Kevin, you know?
Right.
And I had to talk to my therapist about it. And he said the thing you're saying. He said, a lot of times when you reach that wall or that plateau, it means that you are ready for the next step in your life or your career. You're ready for the next thing, and you're ready to break through that and figure it out. Like, frustration leads to that next thing. And that's definitely what, you know, what I was going through, what you're going through. And I would talk to you about that shit, like, all the time. Yeah. Like, yo, you would, you know, call me after an interesting day you had, and I'd be like, look, man, you like cartoons, nigga. Do cartoons, man.
I know, right? And I'm like, yeah, I want to do cartoons. You're like,
do cartoons. And it's just true. Sometimes it's that simple, but, like, we make it so hard. And it really is that simple. It really is sometimes.
After the break, Jermaine and I just keep being real goofy.
Support comes from Japan House LA presenting Yes, Kawaii is Art. Express yourself. Kawaii translates to cute or adorable, yet its influence extends beyond aesthetics to encompass fashion, art, technology, and even social behavior. Sebastian Masuda, the king of kawaii, brings together multiple artworks unraveling the kawaii concepts to foster a sense of joy, innocence, and community as a tool for self-expression and representation. Visitors can step into this colorful world to feel the aesthetic for themselves. May 2nd to November 3rd. No admissions fee. More at japanhousela.com.
Hermaine, do you remember when we would charge each other, like, through Venmo and shit, for giving each other advice? It was like our little therapy sessions that we were charging each other for.
The therapy, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I requested 1,000 and you requested like 200, and we tried to, like, over, like, that was fun, man. I remember, like, we would hang out, like, yeah, so I'm doing this and doing that, but I feel like this and that. You'd be like, yeah. I'm Venmoing you $200 for exactly. this session.
Like, but that's such something that's so telling of our relationship. Like, we met at such an interesting time that we were both going through so many growing pains and obviously like experiencing some very real things. And we would talk to each other, but there came a point where we're like, okay, we can't continue charging each other because we're friends. And we're also not
expensive.
It's getting expensive. And also we're not licensed professionals.
This is true. It's probably legal.
It's probably illegal. Exactly. But so like how have you, I mean, I know both of us have been going through therapy. Like how has that helped a lot with grief?
Yeah, therapy has been very helpful. I've been doing a lot of therapy once a week. I've been doing that. That's been awesome. I have a life coach I talk to. She's her name is Eileen Collins out in Chicago. I met her through a friend of mine. And this is the other thing I've been embracing. I've been embracing the people around me, my family, my friends around me, because Max Collins is a kid I met out in Chicago. He came to a show, him and his mom, beautiful woman, awesome family, came to a show and we took a picture afterwards. And I think Max hit me up on social media and said, "Hey, I'm moving to LA. You know, I would love to, you know, stay in contact." And I'm like, "That sounds cool, man." So kind of in a weird way, mentoring the guy, but I'm not really his mentor because what he wants to do was like a tech kind of AR augmented reality stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "I don't know shit about that. I don't know how I can mentor you, but I can tell you where a good sushi spot is." So he's been really cool. And when my mom died, he understood and he said, "You know, my mom is a life coach and I would love to, you know, connect you to." And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah." So I've been talking to his mom for the better part of 3 years about just, you know, life. And she's been so helpful. She's so maternal. Her voice is just beautiful and like it helps me a lot. Like,
how's it go?
Like, her voice?
Yeah.
I don't want to offend her, but it's very sultry and very relaxing. Okay. It's almost like an audiobook by the most elegant woman who's ever spoken. Ooh. And that is a high praise because she's amazing.
Oh, I love that.
And I say all that because I wouldn't have known anything about what she does or what she could help me with if I didn't embrace Max as a friend and a great kid who, you know, I could possibly help out while he's out here in LA. That's what I've been doing, Lynn. Like, you know, it's been it can be a stressful time, but then I realized that there are people in my family and in my adopted family that can help me with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And as long as I just open up about it, like that's all I have to do. And I used to be a very internal guy because how I grew up in my house was very tumultuous and I couldn't really express myself because I was called a white boy or I was called a nerd or weird or strange and shit like that. So it was hard to express myself in my house because of how it was taken. So I was very internal until I started to do stand-up comedy. And I started to meet other fucking weird people like me, like you and Kev and my boy Josh and the Lucas brothers and Lakeith and Steven, you know, like all those, like my favorite people in this world, like I've been just like opening up to them. And like Steven and I, we talk about fatherhood a lot and he's a beautiful dude and it's just been great. So that's what I've been embracing the most is therapy, meditation, some CBD pills. No, it's deeper than that. Like I don't want to get high because, so when I first moved to LA, I had my dreadlocks and I was a huge like freeform dreadhead. Like, you know, I was a Rasta dude. Like I was smoke all the time. I got my weed card before weed became fully legal. You know what I mean?
So right.
I got all that. And I met you during Superior Donuts and I was like smoking. I was a snob. I was like, "I only smoke Jack Herrera, bro.
I only smoke hybrids,
bro."
Dude, you'd be like smoking on set. And I'm like, "Can we do that?" You're like, "I'm a like literally a producer. Like this is like dude, my show, dude."
Yeah, I know. It was great. And so I would smoke before rehearsal. Like I would get high before like, and you know, you do your little edibles too, but I couldn't do edibles.
Oh, I would do my little edibles.
I would do them too. I would do little pieces. I would do like little niblets. I would do like little sips. So I would do that. But then like, I remember I did mushrooms once, right? Mm-hmm. And I did mushrooms once and it was after my mom died. And they say, if you do mushrooms, go in nature. Go in nature, do mushrooms. And I'm like, "I'm too tired for that shit. I'm gonna do them right now on my couch." And so I did the mushrooms on my couch and I put on Sleepy Hollow, my favorite movie. And so it was, I thought maybe I would freak out because it's a horror movie. I'm like, I'm going to have a bad trip, man. And that was the best trip I've ever had on mushrooms.
Of course,
I've
only because done mushrooms. Sleepy Hollow is like your,
my safe,
it literally my is your safe place.
It is, it is. It's my safe place. And that was the, I only done mushrooms four times now. Mm-hmm. And the first time was great. Second time, mixed reaction. Third time, I was at the Huntington Library in Pasadena, uh-huh. and I was having a bad trip. And the fourth time, I realized that I can control my trip. I can control how my trip goes. Like, I did the mushroom, uh-huh. and I was like, okay, if I think about something negative, I can literally feel my body just get anxious. I can feel mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. But when I started thinking about something positive and beautiful, I literally feel warm, like a warm feeling comes over me.
Right.
And I realized, just control my thoughts, just control my positivity and my negativity, balance that out, mm-hmm. and I will be okay.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, that's what mushrooms are. It just makes you so sensitive to everything. Your thoughts, textures, and, you know, everything is just hyper, you know, it's just hyper.
So good that you get to experience that too and apply it to, like, your life, because that's literally like what they tell you in therapy. It's like, you can control your thoughts. If you are feeling something negative, like because you just saw something that triggered you, or you're thinking about and you're just like staying in that negativity, then that's how you're gonna feel the rest of the day. But like, if you literally change your thoughts, do things that are more positive for you, like when you meditate, like, you know, when I'm having a bad day and I call you and you're just like, here are these. What did you say to me last time? Oh, here are these affirmations. And then I call you and you're like, did you do the affirmations? I'm like, yeah, I'm having a better day now because I did the affirmations. But it's so resistant to like changing our narrative because it's just not how we grew up. It's not what we've experienced. It's because that really wasn't introduced until like later, obviously through therapy and through like different methods of like, just, you can literally make yourself feel better if you just literally change your thoughts.
You can. It doesn't matter what the situation is. It can mm-hmm. be pretty traumatic. However, there are things you can't control, right? But what you can control is your outlook on it, right?
Absolutely.
And I've been truly embracing that, and that's all I can do. I can't control you. Like, some days, and this is what you helped me understand, is like, when you're having a bad day, it hurts me a lot, and it does, because I just want to help Diane be happy, and so I will call you.
You're like the only person I feel comfortable telling I'm having a terrible day.
That's
probably because you're the only person, you're my only friend who calls me as much as any of my friends call me.
I care about you, dude.
I know.
Like, I like, when you don't pick up, this is what you've helped me understand. When you don't pick up the phone, or when you ignore me or send me the voicemail or whatever, I would take that personally, because I'd be like, oh man, she don't want to talk. And that's, you don't want to talk. Like, you just don't want to talk. And that's okay that you don't want to talk. But you will call me eventually and be like,
I love how you always change my voice too. Like, as if I've ever had this deep voice.
Hey. Hey. Hey, man. But no, you know, when you have a bad, I have bad days too, and I call you. And what I've had to understand is like,
yeah,
you have your own process, you know. You, when you're ready to pick up, you will pick up. When you're ready to talk, you will talk. And so I've been accepting that and understanding that more, thanks to you. So thanks.
Well, it's been dope that every time, you know, I do come around and I'm able to be like, hey, I'm just having a terrible week. And you're just like, okay, well, what was it? Or, you know, you have like these affirmations ready for me, or like you have like 10 movie recommendations that you have, or like you have a book that you read, or you like, you literally tell me to fire my entire team because it's not working for me. Or when you... No.
Are they listening? Oh my God.
No, I mean like, but that was something, that's something that I've learned from you, is that, you know, I don't have to let whatever my identity or whatever is going on with me, like, limit me, you know what I mean? And like, that's, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, if there is mm-hmm. something that you don't like or that you are not comfortable with, change it. You know, it's okay to say, no, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. No, I don't feel comfortable. Hey, Jack, Jack and Harir, both of you are no longer serving me. So I need to like move on because, you know, we've outgrown each other or whatever. Yes. But meeting you, you have never let like whatever identity people have like placed on you limit you and what you are able to create.
Oh, you know, it's funny you say that. I had this conversation recently regarding mm-hmm. the pressure we put on ourselves. as people of color, right? Like, there's already pressure from the outside sort of world. And then when we put the pressure on ourselves, sometimes it can be heavy, man.
What has been that process for you, though? Like, what has been, like, you navigating through this space as a Black man?
I do what I want. You know, for years, all we wanted was our freedom, right? That's it. It was to be free. So I'm embracing that freedom. I'm doing the fuck I want to do. That's all I'm doing. That's it. I don't care what anyone thinks or says about it. I'm going to do what I want to do. I've earned it, you know? I can have my flaws. I can embrace my contrarian beliefs. I can seek, you know, help in different ways. I can do whatever I want to do because that's what my ancestors fought for, you know, for me to do what I want to do. That's it. That's all that fucking matters is that. There's so much pressure with how things can be perceived, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to be a prisoner of other people's opinions. That's another added piece of anxiety, especially these days. Like it's not fair to be a prisoner of other people's opinions, and it's so easy to fall under that. It's so easy with social media, with criticisms on whether it's on online or with people out in the real world who have forgotten compassion, you know, all that stuff it can weigh you down if you let it. But at the end of the day, I can't control any of that. So do what you want to do. They're going to judge you anyway, right? So that's kind of what I've been, like, I wake up every day with my daughter and we have this mantra. And I tell her every day, we look at each other in our eyes and our mantra is, Her name is Tabe, so I say, my name is Tabe. I'm in control of my heart and my mind and my body and soul. And we repeat that 4 times. And then I go, right? And she goes, yeah. And I'm like, let's go have some fun. Let me go have fun. You only live one life. I'm not going to do it trying to, you know what I mean?
Please, like, other people's like opinions
please everybody. Nah, man, I'm going to die happy as shit.
And that's the thing. Yeah. If you follow that, you are living proof that if you follow your heart and what you want to do and what makes you happy, you fucking get to create interesting shit. And you have, I mean, you know what I'm saying? You have such a fucking colorful career and you just started. No, you just, and not just a career, Jimmy. And I'm so sorry. I don't want to like limit you to that or like reduce you to like your work. I'm saying you have such a colorful life, such beautiful people around you, 2 beautiful kids. And you're just like constantly like, just creating and not even just content for your fans like me.
I love you, dude.
not just content for me, but like you're constantly just creating fucking things around you. Like it's amazing to see you do that. It was honestly like dope to see you do that in Superior Donuts, you know, and wow. Seeing that you were, I'm actually kind of interested a little bit to talk about Superior Donuts because first of all, why didn't we have a fucking theme song? Okay,
because everything's been reduced to 20 minutes now, you know, so there's no time for music. And I don't care if the theme song is 5 minutes, but I wanted a theme song too.
What was our theme song?
Superior Donuts.
Oh no, you do it.
Okay,
go ahead.
Superior Donuts.
For the family.
It was dope because the best TV shows had a black singer do the theme song, like a Darkwing Duck. Like it was that
sounds like Michael McDonald though.
It does. And I think it was a black Michael McDonald.
A black Michael McDonald. Michael McDonald is a black Michael McDonald.
That nigga was black. I don't know. Like, I feel like my like you said, like Family Matters, like Full House. Like, I wanted a theme song, so I'm with you on that. We fought for one, and we eventually got something pretty concise and catchy. But like, I wanted that long 10-minute
Superior Donut for the family.
I remember after every table read, if there was like a heavy message in it, like it'd get quiet, and then we'd go Superior Donut. It was like, it was my favorite, man. I loved it.
So anyway, honey, I just wanted to ask you, like, okay, but this is what I've just found out. You were the first black lead to star in a primetime show on CBS
right.
in an entire generation. like on CBS, like the last show that was like led by a black person was The Cosby Show. Do you know that?
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Brought up a lot.
What? Oh, yeah. Oh, it was brought up a lot.
Oh, yeah. Listen, there was an article about it. And the article was bittersweet because as a black dude, like I said, I want to open doors up for the people in my in my community, especially back home in Hyattsville, Maryland. That's my goal. That's my goal. That's what I want to do. However, when the article feels like it's white people patting themselves on the back, look what we did. Huh? Like we got one. I'm like, at one point it's like, that's great. I'm the first black lead in a TV sitcom in the past 10 years. But the other question I had was why? Like, why? Why did it take so long? You know what I'm saying? And should you be proud of that? Should y'all be proud of that? No, you shouldn't be proud of that. At one point when I was coming up, like when we were both coming up, there were black shows everywhere. There were like TV was black for me. UPN, Moesha, The Parkers, Wayne's Brothers. Everything was black. Martin, like I grew up around black TV. Nickelodeon, like I give them all the credit. Like, you know, Keenan Kel, all that. Black as hell. Like
that show called Black as Hell.
yeah, Black as Hell on Nickelodeon. You know Black as Hell, right? Did I just make that up? And then, I mean, even like the cartoons, like Patty Mayonnaise, black. I'm sure Skeeter was black, but he was blue. Gerald from Hey Arnold, like, she was black. Like, I loved it. And then at some point, it just dried up. Maybe it's because, you know, there's been too much television and everything just sort of spread out. But like, it felt like it was more centralized and it felt like it was more.
How was it writing on Superior Donuts? Was that tough? Like being like after The Cosby Show, was there like all this pressure to like write a certain way? Did you get to do what you wanted to do with that show?
So this is the thing. There is a process, a network process that is ingrained. And you know, it's just ingrained the way you're supposed to write for the amount of time. It can be at times limiting in a show where you want to talk about so much. So some days they were awesome and some days they were frustrating. There were some days we get notes back and you'd be like, what? And some shows didn't get notes and you're like, all right. But there were times where like, I was like, is the show going as far as it can go? Because I feel like the first season, it was like, all right, good introduction. Second season, okay, we getting warm. And then we never got a third season. And the third season, I really wanted to get back to the story and the characters. I wanted to truly bring some, I wanted to act, man. I wanted to act my ass off. And that's where there were moments with Judd that I loved. There were moments with Katie that I loved. There were moments with Maz and Dave and you and Rel that I loved. Yeah, dude.
And me.
Yes. Hell yes, yes. And we never really got to milk it. I'm serious. Like there were times where I was frustrated. I'm like, dude, this show doesn't have to be always a you know, panel discussion about news stories. Like,
because they wanted they wanted people in the Midwest or I don't know who they thought that was watching the show. They felt like they needed to like handhold people. Like I hate that. I hate when networks tell you that you have to like handhold the audience. Like that's unfair. Yeah.
Well, you're treating them like children, and you're undermining their intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not fair to them.
Or us.
I don't mind talking about a specific issue, just as long as it's on story and on character. That's all I cared about. I'm like, I don't care. We're talking about anything. I don't care. I just want to make sure it's from your point of view, Diane, Rel's point of view, Maz, you know, me, you know, Katie. It doesn't matter. I just want to make sure we're on story. Otherwise, why are people watching the show? They can just watch the news. So it was at times really fun to be in the writer's room with Rob, Betsy, and there was so many writers, Cindy, Emily, like Jackie, like Hugh, Dan. It was so many writers. Like they were all amazing writers. Every single one of them were amazing writers and they could all run their own show. It's just that I felt like there was always an uphill battle with the network sort of structure and the antiquated way they like to make shows. That was it. It was, I wanted the show to be a little bit more. And I wanted to get there in the third season. But that's the beauty about shows. Like, it can grow. And I don't think we had that chance to really blossom yet. And that's fine because I learned so much from the show. I learned a lot. I learned a lot being around you. I learned a lot being around the writers. I learned a lot being around the network. I learned how to navigate network calls and notes calls and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it got me to the next, you know, chapter, which was Sorry to Bother You. And after that, I wanted to just be in movies. So it was a beautiful snapping experience. Yeah, I'll snap. Give me my flowers. Where my flowers at?
All your flowers. I love Sorry to Bother You.
I do too.
That was you. Like, that's everything that you like talked about. Genre that was.
Yeah.
All that you wanted in your first film. Like,
I know, dude. So that's I'm glad you brought that up because, again, that movie was full of people who wanted the same thing that I wanted. Mm-hmm. We all wanted a collective thing, which was we were tired of not seeing black people in the movies that we love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there were, you know what I mean? Like, I love Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. But you know how many black people love that? So many. And yet we don't have a movie that we can call that, right?
Right.
There's so many iconoclastic sort of, like, you know, we like everything, man. And I think there are genres we haven't really dipped our, you know, toes into just
such
yet.
An incredible movie. If you haven't checked it out, thank like you. Do yourself a favor. Thank you. What was it like working on that, though? Was it great?
Oh, dude. So again, everybody in that movie wanted to be a part of that movie. Mm-hmm. Terry, Tessa, Steven, Omari, Lakeith, Army, like, everybody wanted to be a part of the film because there was, you know, we all just had this, we haven't done a movie like that yet. Like, right. We haven't done that movie yet. And so we all read the script and we're like, what the fuck is this? I love it. So being on set was so collaborative. Boots, we got to talk about Boots. So coming off Superior Donuts, I get on set and Boots gives me some advice. He's like, so listen, you come from the, you know, the multicam sitcom world, right? So, you know, you're doing movies, you're really just having a conversation where, you know, while you're doing TV, you know, you just really perform in front of a live studio audience. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, word, all right, cool, mm-hmm. Thanks, Boots. And that was the best advice I've ever gotten for my first film.
Mm-hmm.
And he really mellowed me out. He really, you know, he really honed me in, you know? I think he honed a lot of us in. And
we need, like, more directors like that, like Boots.
Dude, we need more movies like that. We need more directors like that. We need more stories. Like, I think it starts with the scripts. That movie took 5 years to get made, I believe. Mm. And it's the issue is, like, there's just not enough of those scripts being supported and nurtured. And that movie was, that script was really honed by Boots. And he had a great support system in Macro and Nina Yang Bongiovi. And she's awesome. Like, the whole crew and the
that's,
cast.
That's what we need more of. It's people who actually want to make things, right? Not just getting on board just because, you know, it's a job or we have to do it. It's like, come on, we need more people getting together that care about something to make, you know, that's what we need to continue showing people and, like, making is more of that. Well, I'm so happy that you're in this world creating work that we all can be so proud of. Jermaine Fowler, everybody. I love you, man.
I love you too, Diane. Thank you for having me.
Jermaine, do you remember when we would charge each other, like, through Venmo and shit, for, like, giving each other advice or therapy? Jermaine likes to party all the time, party all the time, party all the time. Jermaine likes to party all the time, party all the time.
Yeah, No, I'm Not Okay is a production of LAS Studios. Remember to rate and review our show. I just found out that it helps other people find it. So if you like it, share it with your friends. The more people we can get to have conversations about mental health, the better. If you've got a story you want to share about how you deal with mental health issues, send it my way. Record it on your phone's voice memo app and email it to yano@laastudios.com. And be sure to subscribe to our newsletter to get the latest episodes with a note from me, recommendations from our listeners and our team, and listener stories. Sign up at laas.com/newsletters. Jessica Pilot is our talent manager and producer. Our executive producers are Leo G and me, Diane Guerrero. Web design by Andy Cheatwood at the digital and marketing teams at Southern California Public Radio. Thanks to the team at LAS Studios, including Taylor Kaufman, Kristen Hayford, Kristen Muller, Michael Constantino, Robert Joe, Mildred Langford, and Leo G. And a special thanks to Brian Crawford. This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. Additional support comes from the Angel Foundation, supporting transformational leaders, and by the California Healthcare Foundation, dedicated to improving the mental health care system for all Californians.
Studios.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.